Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. Well, today's Monday. It's November 9th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. We begin the day with none other than White Plains Cincinnati reporter, publisher, and editor John Bailey. He'll open up the show. And then at 10:30, we'll be speaking to Michael Edelman, Esquire, political analyst and pundit. And there's a lot to talk about after the elections, not fully validated yet, numbers-wise. But it looks like it's a pre-gone conclusion at this point that Mr. Biden has won. And so we'll have to wait and see how the rest of this stuff unravels. And then from 11 o'clock onward, I'll be talking to you about other, you know, hyperlocal and local news, as well as international news as well. And very, very interesting, even though I haven't said much about it yet. But we did post this morning. It seems that Anthony Morante, who's the member representing District 6, and he's also been a very strong supporter of the community by representing District 6 with respect to the United States Postal Service, interest to expand. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see how he does. He's already announced his campaign for reelection, which will be for the year 2021. Oh, let's see, perfect timing for John Bailey to arrive. Let's bring him in. Bear with me a moment as we bring him in. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning from White Plains, New York, USA. America free again.
Evidently the stock market seems to agree. There's like a major burst in the stock market before it opens up. 1,600 points up. It's over a 5% increase from Friday's closing. Very, very intriguing. So there, the Wall Street is with the Biden campaign and his win and Harris. And then, of course, everybody's excited about the new coronavirus vaccine that seems to be 90% effective. That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Well, it's very good news considering the way the coronavirus is spreading.
Yeah, we're getting a second. I don't understand. Why do they call it a second wave? Some people are starting to call this a third wave. Is it a third wave? I don't know.
It's not. It never stopped.
Right,
the only place to control
higher.
Corona.
Isn't that what they're talking about when they talk about a surge? Okay.
Well, it's the numbers are just not to be believed out across the heartland of the country. I mean, I just feel sorry for them because let's face it, they just don't have the medical capacity to handle the amount of cases.
Yeah, that's evidently become proven and true. We're at that point where it seems that the hospitals will be inundated if this continues.
We should be adding some sort of handle on that. You know, that is the big problem. That is the big problem. We're not going to have a lockdown until after the Biden administration takes office. But they have to think about that. I mean, we have Thanksgiving holidays coming up. And despite here in New York, the governor suggesting people celebrate virtually and not have family gatherings, it's just and also you will have the Christmas holidays of travel.
Sure.
Yeah. And this is going to spread it exponentially.
I got to ask you a question, though. Even though a lot of people miss family and loved ones, but Are people not concerned about becoming infected when so many people become infected every day? Do they have to go out? Do they have to, kiss and hug and people they don't even know? Why is this so important? Can't we function?
Well, you are the personal, the persona, your own personal person is defined by people's reaction to you. It is a social, people who write and are reclusive like I am, I even need it, and because yes, right, exactly. We are social beings. I mean, you wouldn't have the dating sites that we have today, pornography sites that we have today, social media we have today. That is evidence that people want to be social. They want to connect. They want to mean something to other people. I think that's really it. We want to be meaningful in other person's lives. And otherwise, we have no meaning. Boy, that was profound. Write that down, folks. Write that down, folks, and think about that.
No, we're validated by others, is what you're saying.
That's right. Right. Okay. Why do politicians go out and say, oh, I hear you talking? It's because they want to be loved.
Yeah, that's true.
And, of course, that's difficult after you review their performance over a few years. This business of coronavirus locally is just alarming. On Saturday, Westchester tested 1,606 people and 225 tested positive. That's a rate of 3.4%. I think that's the highest Westchester has ever shown in these daily counts. Mm. And this is not good because it was less than 3 after Friday. I did it. I put it up on my show. And so now you have a basic outbreak territory in Westchester County. I'm sorry, but 3.4% is just not acceptable. People are not paying attention, and there's absolutely no enforcement, from what I can tell.
That's very true as well.
That's true. Now, why is that?
Are not being heeded.
Yes. On Friday, the infection rate was 2.9%, and in Westchester. And last Thursday, it was 2.3%. So there you see a lot of coronavirus infections booming up. That's 178 on Thursday, 234 on Friday, and 225 on Saturday.
Mm.
That's not good.
Well, is there anything that anyone can do other than just simply tabulate the numbers? Is there a way to get people to do better for themselves as well as for the people that they bump into every day? Or is there nothing that really can be done? We can't control people, can we?
No. The only thing you can do is perhaps fine them for not wearing a mask. But they're not doing that. Now, why are these infection rates in Westchester significant? Because in the Bronx, it was 3.2%. So we are infecting slightly more than the Bronx. Brooklyn, it was 1.9, really good for Brooklyn. Manhattan, 1.7%. This is through Saturday. And 0.5% in Nassau County. And in Queens, 2.3%. So the city, which was having major problems with controlling it, is paying a little more attention than Westchester County is. This is on the infection rates. Like more people get infected in there. Go ahead.
Can I ask you a question? What is it then that's different about the demeanor in the city as opposed to Westchester County. Is Westchester County not listening? Is New York City listening? You know, what's the difference?
I have to say that New York City has made people much more aware, and the remote learning process certainly prevents spreading of it through schools.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no notion that remote learning has been successful in New York City. I don't think it's really working too well, and I have evidence from that from a person who teaches in the city.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, and to my way of thinking, that's just one person who's handling remote learning. But I mean,
mm-hmm.
people are just the students. It's just not the same. And as I say, they need the social thing, and they need the teachers, who believe in, and find that the teachers in the New York City schools that they have had are their one connection with hope.
Yeah. I want you to cover a couple of other
issues. That's why you become a teacher.
Right.
Because you want to make the future generation better. That's why you become
Absolutely.
A policeman. You want to help. It's why you become a fireman. You want to save people's property. It verifies, it makes you feel noble and doing something that is so
mm-hmm.
needed. But anyway,
well, definitely.
Enough preaching.
I wanted to ask you about something else. You know, Chris Burdick, he's the assemblyman elect to the New York Assembly District 93 that was formerly held by David Buchwald. How does that look? And what happened with people like Buchwald and Carlucci, who entered the race and were, you know, supposedly God's gift? Did the pollsters mess up with these races? Because a lot of people were destroyed by this whole process, in the sense that they lost their position, they're no longer in politics, they've been disheveled, and it's almost a disaster considering people like Buchwald were regarded as practically gods in our political
right.
world.
Well, this is true. However, what you have to realize is, if you have a pretty safe seat and you aspire to higher office, you have to resign that seat unless you run in an off year. And
mm-hmm.
And when your seat is up, and it is a huge risk. Now, what you need to depend upon if you do not win the primary, in fact, the primary, that we had about 8 persons become political non-entities because of the result of that
right.
primary. Jeremiah Pearson.
Yeah.
I mean, it's and what happens? These names become hard to remember. They lose their sense of presence in the political
mm-hmm.
World, and it is a grave risk to sacrifice the seat you hold that you're pretty comfortable with because you think you can win the primary. It's possible to do it, but you have to have a limited field.
Mm.
Go ahead.
In a sense, all these candidates, what they ended up doing is they all made an error, didn't they? They must have been filled with the concept that they could win, but I guess the pundits were all wrong.
The intriguing thing was Mondaire Jones comes out of nowhere, okay, to defeat
mm-hmm.
The other who I can't even remember who he was running against. Yes, in the major election, now he's in Congress
mm-hmm.
for a long time, because once you get into Congress, it's very difficult.
It's a lifetime job.
To unseat you. It is a lifetime job. Look at Peter King down in, I think, Staten Island, is it? But,
I
mean,
Elliot Engel in Westchester County, he was there for 32 years.
Yes, 16 terms. My God.
Yep,
and really,
right.
I cannot remember, other than shaking hands with every president at every State of the Union message, what he did. I can't name one thing. And that's my fault.
You infer something that's, I think, we've never discussed before, but why is it that is there a problem with the process when we elect people to the Assembly and to the Senate, and once we do, it becomes a lifetime job? Maybe we should have a call for term limits.
Yes,
people
but
don't
nobody
think about
would,
that too much.
Nobody would run.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Why?
The whole idea of going to Albany is you become a person that is able to raise money. You're able to protect your seat because of your ability to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
You have a great deal of clout in your steering money to your local communities. And that's what they essentially do. And when push comes to shove...
That is their job. Okay.
Yes. However, another job is to improve government.
People who are elected to office are there to improve government. Government needs to be, defined by people who look into the government, because we haven't changed anything about government in maybe 200 years.
Right. Look at reform. Which was conveniently overlooked by the legislature. I believe they did give themselves a raise, did they not?
Yeah, that they do. They're always good at
that. That they did. They're very good.
Yeah.
But that's not reform. That's a no contest.
That's not reform.
That is not reform
that's
at all.
That's not reform.
Money
but
for
also,
nothing.
But there is
money
talk.
For nothing
there
is not reform.
Right, but there is talk right now, for the first time, to be concerned about the Electoral College. And do you think that's going to go anywhere?
No,
there's
because
some
you have to
in
have
our demeanor.
It's a. I feel that if you take it takes 3/4 of the states to change the Constitution with a new amendment. Like, look how long it took the ERA amendment to get passed. It took at least 10 to 15 years, didn't it, I think?
Yeah, right.
And so that's why that is a no-brainer. It's a good talking point, as they say, as politicians say, but I don't think it is going to happen, and it's certainly not going to happen in this Congress unless – the Democratic Party is able to win both those runoff U.S. Senate elections in Georgia.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about specifically. And so you actually jump started that. The race at the moment is not sufficient for the Biden ticket to actually pass any of the legislation that it's espoused, because the Senate could be it's going to be a formidable. They won't be able to be overcome if they choose not to. So
they can't.
If you can't overwhelm the Senate. That means there are two seats in Georgia where people are running. Democrats are running for Senate. Is it conceivable?
Right.
That probably the whole nation will be involved in that particular race, won't it?
There will be an enormous amount
yes
of money
no.
poured into it. I mean, this
yes,
is
absolutely.
This is
This is the Republican Party's last stand other than the Supreme Court, okay?
Right.
And if they have to win both of those seats to retain power in Congress.
So with those two seats, that means it'll be a 50-50 split between Dems and Republicans, and therefore Vice President Harris could actually break the deadlock so that
she
the Democrats will always win. Assuming
she could.
That she goes for it, yes. So that's what we're, that's where we are right now.
Right, the most important
so
two elections
up in the air.
You will ever see, because it, it is 4 years. What it does is it is a tremendous political advantage for the Republicans to retain the Senate, because they can, over the next 4 years, pound the Biden administration with being unable to compromise and being unreasonable. And this is what they always do when they have the majority. That's what they've done the last...
You're going off the deep end, John. The bottom line is...
Am I?
They can do that if they want to, but the point is that no legislation will pass unless you get the Senate approval. Approval by the Democrat who can overwhelm the Republicans, at which point the Senate Republicans will become ineffective. So it's not any different, is it, when the Republicans are in charge or when the Dems are in charge? It's all about the party. But the question is, if we don't get those two Dems in office, that means at the end of forgiving college debt. There's so many other issues that we spoke about that are not going to go anywhere.
True.
Everything's right.
So that is why it is important. But a majority never guarantees that you can't persuade some Republican senators that they change to make the right decision. Like, who are the weakest Republicans in there? Romney, very weak.
You know what? But yeah, he may be weak, but the point is he's not moving over and he's not becoming a Democrat. There's a lot of wishful thinking, but we also have to be logical about it. If he wanted to change, he could have changed before the election.
Yes, and Susan Collins, who got reelected.
But she won. But she got reelected. Unbelievable. Yes. Nobody thought she'd ever make it.
Right. Well, that the power of incumbency. The power of incumbency and habit is, very, very good. Very good power to have.
It works for those people who are incumbent, of course.
Yeah, with the...
Well, I guess that's the whole thing. So it was interesting that you spoke to a professor from Syracuse University. And how did he view
this
whole issue this
was
about
just
getting
one
control
of those,
in Georgia?
Yeah, this was one of the serendipitous things. I mean, Syracuse University reached out and sent this commentary by this professor who has studied Southern politics for a long time, and he points out the disadvantages that the Democrats will have if they cannot take those two runoff races. And one of them is approvals of effective cabinet people that President-elect Biden wants to put into place. They could reject the more liberal type of and that is very important. And they could also block legislation and prohibit and pass legislation. Well, they can't really, because the Democrats still control the House, but not by as much. So the House, it might be hard for perhaps more conservative Democrat representatives to vote for the liberalizing such things as the Dreamers, if they wanted to pass legislation during that. I mean, it's just would be and he pointed
the big question
out.
The big question then is, does America recognize that these two seats that are going to be contentious and probably money will be thrown at it in order to be able to win those two seats for the Dems, and probably money will be thrown at it in order to deny those seats to become Democrat. And if they don't get those two seats, does that mean that we've got a lame duck presidency before the president even come into office? Because these are elections that are going to happen in January, right?
Absolutely. January is the day, and it's just the anxiety continues. Let's put it that way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because the Democrats were unable to swing enough Senate seats, which the pundits thought was quite possible.
Well, the pundits thought a lot of things, but the pundits have
been
wrong.
Yes, they did.
The only one that's been right about this to a good extent as far as who will win, and he said this over a year and a half ago, is Michael Edelman, who predicted that Trump would lose. But that's the only one that I know. The others were giving you opinion of why they wanted Trump to stay in office, but that was that. I guess the biggest problem is, okay, there's going to be the political game that's going to be played out. What about the nation? Are we going to be able to ever get together again? Because nobody thought it would be such a stalemate. This is very, very close. This is cutting edge, my God. It's racist.
Yes, well, no one ever expected it to be that close. We had a gentleman who lives in Westchester and teaches at Pace and at the John Jay School of Justice.
Right.
Who has this good ability to predict the elections. He had Mr. Biden winning by like up to 90 electoral votes.
Really?
Yeah. So,
wow.
He was correct because he predicted Biden would win, but the margin much less than he expected. And
well, that was the thing that was interesting. Biden got a tremendous amount of votes. So he got the popular vote. At the same time, he got the Electoral College votes. So this is the first time in a very long time because Trump, everyone wanted to diminish him by saying, well, you may have won the Electoral College, but you didn't win the popular vote. Is that another issue that's going to be contemplated for a change, do you think, in the future? Or we're just going to accept it for what it is?
But they won't do it. What they will attempt to do is eliminate early voting.
Why?
They would eliminate it because if you have a particular mindset of the voter a couple of weeks before the election, and they vote and something happens, then they've already voted. And they can't change their mind. And this really helped in this election. I know it didn't.
Do you think it helped Trump or did it help Biden?
It helped the Democrats.
Uh-huh.
Because things were really tanking from a news standpoint for the Trump administration about a month ago. And that really affected the absentee ballot. And also COVID affected it. You may not have, if the vaccine comes online, by the next national election, you may not have the COVID threat to deal with, which would require more absenteeing. However, I also feel that the pipe dream is for everybody to vote electronically across the nation.
We'll have to see. We'll have to wait for next week to discuss that as well, John, because we've got to move on to our next guest. But thanks again for kickstarting.
And congratulations congratulations to Mr. Edelman for calling it before everybody saw it.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, John. All the best to you.
Right.
Okay, let's bring in Michael Edelman, you know, with accolades already thrown his way. Let me see if we can pull him in. Bear with me a second. Okay, I think, yeah, there we go. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you,
sir? Good morning, Hezzy. How are you?
Okay, well, you know, evidently your crystal ball was one of the clearest in the nation. And because I think it's been about a year and a half, you've been saying that that Trump would lose. And with all sorts of validations throughout the year and a half that you were talking about it. Where do we stand now? The votes have not yet been verified or certified. Maybe that's a better word.
Yeah.
And so how much longer do we take before we get certification?
Well, that's up to each state. Some of them, they all have different rules. Some of them have automatic recounts. Some of them still have some votes out they haven't counted. It's just that mathematically, even if they count those votes, Trump can't win.
Right.
And he certainly can't win in Pennsylvania. So I would think, you know, within the next week, there'll be a certification. And that will be when it's time for Donald Trump to concede. But I don't expect that he will.
Mm-hmm. So he's becoming recalcitrant. What did they think he'd be able to do? Because, you know, either he won or he didn't. So
right.
There's not much he can do there.
He can't do a thing. He can bring lawsuits,
yeah.
But without evidence, the court won't hear the lawsuit. They keep talking about fraud and illegal votes, but they don't have any evidence. So if you don't have any evidence...
Yeah, that was the thing that really offended me, that he kept on saying there was fraud, but he never showed one iota of proof, which I found that really disgusting.
And frankly, that's an insult to every poll watcher and leader that stayed in these election headquarters and counted these ballots through the night and through the next day until they were all counted, both Democrats and Republicans. He doesn't care who he offends as long as he gets his way, but guess what? He's not getting his way.
Well, one thing I was very concerned about after even it looked like the Biden was going to win, the big issue was the Senate seats that are up for grabs in Georgia. And I was concerned that if they weren't voting in Democrats to the Senate seats, then the administration would be a lame duck, even though it had won, because it could be always overruled by the Senate.
Let me stop.
Go ahead.
The Democrats don't have to win the Senate for Joe Biden to be able to do business with the Senate, because you've got two or three United States senators that are moderate senators who would agree that if Joe Biden's legislative agenda is moderate, that they could go along with it. They're Mitt Romney, Lisa Murkowski, and Susan Collins. No reason that they can't bolt their own party, Mitch McConnell, and agree to pass legislation if the House agrees to the legislation. So I expect that there won't be the kind of gridlock that you have when in an election year where Mitch McConnell insists that the Republicans stay lockstep with the president.
Okay. All right. So that's not – because I was concerned that then a lot of issues that were part of the progressive construct and the rationale for a lot of people coming out to vote for the Democrats could be just obliterated by a lack of, getting a majority. So – but like you're right. I never thought about – those three senators coming into play because they were moderate and could conceivably side with the Democrats about that.
Exactly. Yep.
Are we going to – has this contest particularly informed us about anything in particular? Are we going to be concerned about the Electoral College Will there be contemplation of expunging it or changing it, that sort of thing?
Well, people have always talked about that after elections, especially when the winner or the loser gets more popular votes than the winner. But they're working on a compact now that has to be ratified by a number of states, totaling 270 electoral votes, and the states are going to agree to award their electoral votes to the popular vote winner nationwide. But they don't have enough states yet to do that. So that's in the works. That's a lot easier than amending the Constitution.
Absolutely. Oh, that's wild. So, I mean, if there's a will, there is a way, evidently, the adage goes.
Well, so, you know, Joe Biden got 5 million votes more, essentially, than Donald Trump.
Right.
So, you know, that's going to get worse and worse and worse, and you can't have a minority running the country. That's a function of the way the framers set up the Constitution, giving states like Wyoming with 800,000 people the same two senators that New York and California and Texas and Florida have.
Right, right. And then how are we – well, Biden's already come up with some concepts that he wants to instill once he gets into office, which will be in January. So he's got a plan with regard to the coronavirus. He wants to join the World Health Organization that we pulled away from, the Paris Accords, the Iran issue. How do those things sit with the Democratic Party? And since they won, and it'll be under his aegis that they will push forward, how does that look then?
Well, I think those issues are all issues that most of the Democrats would subscribe to, especially the Paris climate change. The Paris climate agreement, there was no reason to get out of that. The reason Trump got out of it was because he wanted to obliterate everything that Barack Obama did, whether it was good or bad. He didn't care. He just wanted to erase. He wanted to erase the record of Barack Obama. Now Joe Biden's going to be able to erase the record of Donald Trump.
Yeah. But other than, you know, trumping each other, you know, or eradicating what others have done, is there a forward position that Biden is going to take? Is there something that could be done with regard to the trade with China and on a world basis? What policies can we expect from the Biden administration?
I don't know what they are yet. He hasn't laid them out. That's what transitions are for. That's why he's going to have task force for coronavirus. And we got to wait to see what his cabinet appointments are. And then he'll lay out his positions.
As far as I'm concerned, I find that to be a failing, not of him specifically, but of everybody who just says, vote for me, I'm the pretty one, I'm the smart one, whatever. But we have no clue what they're going to do. So it's like a shot in the dark.
Biden made it very clear that he was going to rejoin the Paris agreements.
Yes.
He made it very clear that he was going to support an increase in minimum wage, which, by the way, passed in Florida, which voted for Trump. He made it very clear that he was going to fix the Obamacare rather than repeal it, which is what Trump wanted to do. He's been very clear on a lot of stuff.
Okay. I didn't think the message was that clear, but, you know, a little bit here and a little bit there. I guess that works, so that's fine. I'm not going to be able to change it, because I'm hoping a little bit more exactitude, but it is what it is. So what do we have to look forward to now? Now we're going to wait for the validation of these ballots. Was there a problem with early voting? Was there a problem with the machinery, or was there no problem at all?
There was no problem.
Okay.
There was no problem. The problem was in the head of Donald Trump. Figure out that when they counted the in-person votes on Election Day first, he would have a lead because it was mostly Republicans voting. But when they got around to the mail ballots that were mostly Democrats, he was going to lose whatever lead he had.
Well, that's a big issue.
So that's
why is it that we've been railroaded by all these pundits and opinion makers who really and pollsters who just didn't have a handle on what was going on. They failed 4 years ago with Hillary Clinton, not recognizing how it should have gone or based on what they thought. Is that what's moving our elections nowadays? Just, you know, a concept and with no validation? Because we should have been able to do a better job. Why aren't we?
Well, polling is an art and a science.
The science part of it is
drawing the sample and making sure that the sample is representative of the electorate. And apparently there were plenty of people that didn't want to tell the truth when they were polled. They didn't want to say they were for Donald Trump. They said they were for Joe Biden. The poll, if people aren't going to tell the truth when they're asked the question, you can't expect the polling to be accurate.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, that's definitely the case. Do you think that we're going to also have a better relationship with countries around the world with the Biden campaign?
Much better.
He's been getting a lot of support from Germany, from England, from France.
Everywhere.
There are some countries who haven't, but, you know, that's their problem.
Everybody. Every nation has congratulated him except Putin.
Yeah.
Because
Putin is stepping down. I think he's suffering from Hodgkin's disease or Parkinson's.
Parkinson's. I don't know that'll step down, but who needs Putin to congratulate you? Putin's probably upset that his puppet didn't get reelected.
That's true as well. Have we become more aware, do you think, with this election than before? Have people become sensitive to the impact of Russian interference in our elections, the Chinese, the Iranians, and others, or are we still not in belief? Do we not believe this?
Well, I think the major tech companies like Facebook and TikTok, and they've taken steps to remove fake accounts and foreign accounts that were spreading disinformation. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't do that in 2016 because they weren't aware that it was going on, but they are now. And so Russia had very little to say on those social platforms about the candidates. And they weren't able to influence the election as they did in 2016.
Well, I got to ask a question, which I think overlays everything here, and that is, you had a president, President Trump. He got elected into office. There were reasons why he got elected. There were reasons maybe that he shouldn't have been elected. It doesn't matter. But he got in, and he's in almost 4 years. And then while he was in office, you didn't find social media shutting him down because he spoke falsehood. But only in the last week or so, he was shut down. He couldn't spew the same sort of vacuous comments and get away with it. Is that the human dynamic? Is there just no way to actually, come up with something conclusive and to show people that facts are facts only if you can prove them? Are we going to repeat the same thing under Biden? I don't know if Biden's going to do the same thing Trump, but it's conceivable that others could do it.
The problem with Donald Trump from the very beginning, and some of us saw it when he first announced, is he's a liar.
Well, you did.
And
he's a liar.
And Fox News opinion hosts like Hannity and Ingraham and Pirro are an echo chamber for his lies. And so the people that watch Fox aren't getting fact-based news. They're getting whatever Donald Trump says, which is a lie. And Jeanine Pirro was suspended.
Yes. Well, do you think that this can be ameliorated in our political process so that people actually get valid information?
Only
is there a way to do that?
Only if networks like Fox tell their broadcasters that they can't repeat untruths.
Okay.
That's where this is all coming from. This is all being repeated by people that watch Sean Hannity and listen to Rush Limbaugh. They repeat the nonsense they're told. We never had this in this country.
No, we never did. No. Is it conceivable, therefore, that since Biden is the one, the elected president, seems like it's a done deal now. But the point is there any way that things can change now with the Biden administration, even those that may challenge Biden? But if the facts are wrong, the facts are wrong. And who's going to do the checking? Will they also fire people like Hannity and Pirro from like Fox News?
I suspect Pirro is going to be fired. She's a one-night, one-trick pony. The advertising income she generates is bupkis. But Hannity is the number one draw. Tucker Carlson is the number one draw along with Hannity. And they don't want to lose them because they'll lose income. And for the Murdochs, it's not about truth. At least for Rupert and Lachlan, it's not about truth. James left because of that.
Yes.
But
correct.
You'll note that when the president accused the election of being corrupt, not only did Fox News rebut that, but the Wall Street Journal news side did, and so did the New York Post on the news side, not the opinion side.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, making sure that democracy isn't compromised is part of what newspapers do.
Yeah. Do people believe media, or are there some places that have proven their integrity and others have not? Does that also become, you know, those are going to be like sacrificed. A lot of places will be sacrificed because they don't report the news.
Well, there's people that report the news on television, engage in fact-based reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Fox thinks that they are liberally oriented and that they only report positively for liberal Democratic candidates, which is not true. They do their research. So does the Times. So does the Washington Post. But once you demonize these news outlets, it's very difficult to get credibility back because people start thinking of them in terms of fake news, which is what Trump calls them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so are things going to change, or are we not in the mood for change and we're looking for stability at this point? And
I think this should be expected.
We're looking for stability.
Yeah. This was an election about restoring calmness and truth to the Oval Office. And once Trump leaves, don't forget, you know who else is going to leave? Pompeo, Betsy DeVos, Wilbur Ross.
Right.
Bill Barr, everybody that was destabilizing the nation and the world, they're going to go.
Yeah.
They're going to go. Once that happens, we're going to restore the integrity of the FBI and the CIA, our intelligence agencies, our courts.
Mm.
And the institutions that have made us strong post-World War II, the relationship with NATO is going to be improved, with our other allies in Southeast Asia is going to be improved, and we will no longer be the laughingstock of the world.
Uh-huh. Wow. Yeah, so there's a lot that's going to be happening in the next 4 years, that's for sure.
That's right.
But I guess America's ready for it. They've been feeling the pain with Trump for quite a while. He seems unstoppable.
Yeah.
Evidently, that wasn't the case. And so we have to go from there. What's going to happen? Are there ramifications to the president at the moment? Is it conceivable that he'll be brought up with charges?
Well, no. After he leaves office,
business-wise,
he no longer has immunity. I suspect he may try to pardon himself and his family before he leaves, which will be a real indication that he is a criminal and he has been operating a criminal enterprise his entire adult life. But what he can't do is pardon himself from state crimes. So to the extent that Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York, and Cy Vance are investigating Trump and his family, they can be charged.
And is there any protection that he has by having moved to the new domicile for him in Florida?
No, that doesn't protect him.
No. Okay. Well, there's all kinds of talk that I've been reading that in the gossip column that Melania Trump is thinking of divorcing the president.
I think I think she was thinking of that before he ran.
Yes. Yeah, that's amazing.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Mm-hmm. What about our relationship with South America? There's going to be a different relationship with Jair Bolsonaro from Brazil. Are we going to have greater influence in South America and just have a better relationship with South America? Because they're in our hemisphere. With Mexico?
I would imagine the relationship with our South American friends is going to be more honest. You're not going to have a president that's accusing them of bringing rapists to the United States. You're not going to have a president who is going to insist that they pay for a wall on the southern border. And a guy like Bolsonaro, he's going to be at risk because he no longer will have a colleague in the president who's a white nationalist and an American firster. That's going to be gone.
Well, you know, there was always talk about all sorts of rioting and demonstrations in the streets. That hasn't happened. Why did we hear that sort of thing? Where did that come from? Or is that part of the offensive from the Trump
team? It came from Republicans ginning up fear that if a Democrat got elected, the market was going to crash. The market's up 1,600 points. There would be rioting in the suburbs. Minorities would be moving to the suburbs and all of that. And nobody bought that.
Yeah.
That's what Trump has always sold. He sold fear.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be very, really, really, it's mind-boggling how this has all worked out. But then again, people didn't have the intestinal fortitude to challenge this. Was he too powerful all this time, Trump, for the last 4 years? Is he now a little bit vulnerable for the first time?
He was powerful in his own party because they were afraid of him. Because, two tweets later, they would have a primary. So they wouldn't speak out. They lost their spine. They lost their backbone with a couple of notable exceptions. But now that he's going to be gone, I suspect there'll be many more Republican senators who will have something to say other than deferring to Donald Trump.
Well, I read today also that there are two companies, one from the United States and one from Germany, that put together a vaccine that they believe is 90% effective. As opposed to, let's say, a 50% effective rate for the regular flu. So that's really huge. And that was one of the reasons for the 1,600-point upshot on Wall Street. And the market hasn't opened yet. Or I guess it should be open by now. Yeah.
Oh, it's been open for 1 hour and a half.
The futures looked at 16. Yeah, the futures were at 1,600 before the market opened. So is that should help a great deal, or will it? Yeah. Or will the fact that Governor DeSantis in Florida hasn't been able to clamp down in Florida for a long time, is that going to also unsettle him? Is he vulnerable as well? As a governor,
I think any governor who didn't take the virus seriously is going to be in trouble when they seek re-election. Florida is pretty much, you really can't tell there's a pandemic down here, except for people wearing masks. You have to wear a mask when you go to grocery shopping. You have to wear a mask when you go into a restaurant. They seat you 6 to 10 feet away from somebody else. We don't go to restaurants yet. We take out food, but we don't sit in the restaurant. Biden's going to have a task force, and they're going to make recommendations. I'm sure wearing a mask is one of those recommendations. It can't be mandatory, but they're going to recommend that everybody do it. They're also going to do contact tracing so that they can find out where the disease is once people are identified with symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to have a federal effort that didn't exist with Donald Trump, because Donald Trump believed Jared Kushner, his advice was let the governors do what they want. And that way, if they make a mistake, you can yell at them. And if they do the right thing, you can take the credit, but you're not going to do anything.
Right.
And because Kushner was wrong, but it's too late now to undo that advice.
Hmm. Wow. So where do we go from here? Just we have to wait for the transition to take place. We won't really know very much. We may get an inkling of which way the president-elect is going to go, but he gets sworn in. What is it, the 20th or the 21st of January?
January 20th is inauguration. Don't expect Donald Trump to show up.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you've been right so far. That would be such a ridiculous thing. Is his pride hurt? Is that the problem with Trump?
No, his problem is he's a malignant narcissist, and those people can't believe they could possibly ever be wrong, or they could possibly ever lose.
Yeah, well,
that's one of the symptoms of narcissism.
Yeah, well, evidently it's a slap in the face for him. Well,
yeah.
Michael Edelman, as usual, thank you so much for so much input. And thank you. All the best to you.
You too.
I appreciate
it. I'll speak to you.
Be well. Thank you. Well, there we have it with Michael Edelman, Esquire, a political analyst as well as a pundit, just always on target. And he was the first person that I ever met I met him before a year and a half ago, but the point is the first one that was able to show you the trajectory with respect to Donald Trump and how it was going to happen, that he would literally disintegrate over time, which is exactly the way it happened. So very, very fascinating, to say the least. Now, let me quickly look at some other things here. I wanted to quickly go over a local issue. Bear with me a moment here. Where is it? Yeah. Let's move on to this page. Bear with me a second. Having difficulty with the internet service today. Okay. Well, this is very, very interesting. Council member Anthony Moranti, who represents the 6th District in the city of Yonkers, his re-election campaign Oh, 1 second here. Don't know what this is. Hold on a minute. Okay, that's where I see there was a problem here. Bear with me a moment, because I see that something that I posted is missing a word in the title. So it's a Council Anthony Moranti announces. That's what it is. 1 second. I think that was probably one of the problems as well with regard to the internet service, because I saw like so many mistakes already. Bear with me a moment. Okay, I think now I should get it. One minute. All right, bear with me a moment. Okay, so that looks like it's fine. Let me just bring this together. And we'll be fine with it in a moment. Just need to make sure that it takes. It's doing that now. Okay, so Councilmember Anthony Moranti announces his reelection effort, and it turns out that over 60 enthusiastic supporters attended the announcement yesterday, and so it's going to be very, very intriguing how he's going to be moving forward. There was talk that he would not, and so on and so forth, but it was just like naysayers who wanted to push him out of the equation, but evidently that's not the case. So he was, yesterday morning, attending his rally was Yonkers City Council Minority Leader Mike Breen, Chairman of the Westchester County Republican Committee Doug Colty, and the Yonkers GOP Chairman John Larkin. They were among the people who were there, and Moranti's campaign headquarters are now at 2070 Central Park Avenue in Yonkers, New York. And Councilman Moranti's campaign mantra has been and continues to be, it's all about you. So Anthony Moranti is well known and respected for his responsiveness to his constituents' needs and for fighting to protect Yonkers' taxpayer. He is the only council member to vote no on a property tax increase for the 2021 city budget. Anthony Moranti has also opted not to take a taxpayer-funded city car. He has stood shoulder-to-shoulder with StopUPS.org in their fight to protect their neighborhood against United Parcel Service expansion. And Moranti has even initiated and passed legislation to put the word Christmas back on all official City of Yonkers tree lightings. And I'm really thrilled about that, and I'm not of the Christian faith. Anyway, Council Member Anthony Moranti said, I take the title of public servant very seriously. You pay your taxes, you are the customer, and are entitled to excellent service. I'm always here to listen and help with any issues my constituents may have. And those who'd like to join the campaign or volunteer with his reelection campaign can call up 914-361-1420. So that's 914-361-1420. Or you can direct email to info@moranti2021.com. So I figured you'd want to know that, but certainly the timing is perfect. So we'll see where all that goes. Now let me just quickly make sure that this is still all in place. And okay, so we're fine here. And then there was some other issues, of course. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has ended a truce by warning of incompetent Democratic Party. Well, the New York representative denies the Movement for Black Lives and Green New Deal cost seats. And she says She was criticized, she has criticized the Democratic Party for incompetence in a no-holds-barred post-election interview with the New York Times, warning that if the Biden administration does not put progressives in top positions, the party would lose big in the 2022 midterm elections. Signaling that the internal moratorium in place while the Democratic while the Democrats worked to defeat Donald Trump was over, the left-wing New York representative sharply rejected the notion advanced by some Democrats that progressive messaging around the movement for Black Lives and the Green New Deal led to the party's loss of congressional seat in last week's election. The real problem, said Ocasio-Cortez, was that the party lacked, quote, core competencies, end quote, to run campaigns. There's a reason Barack Obama built an entire national campaign apparatus outside of the Democratic National Committee, she told the Times. Astrid Herndon said there's a reason that when we didn't activate or continue that, we lost House majorities. Because of the party, in and of itself, does not have the core competencies, and no amount of money is going to fix that. So Ocasio-Cortez had defeated a longtime Democratic politician in 2018 and who won re-election in her Bronx district by more than 50 points, endorsed the Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders over Joe Biden in the Democratic presidential primary. And since then, Ocasio-Cortez and her closest allies in Congress, a four-woman group known as the Squad, quote-unquote, who all won re-election last week, towed the party line while calling on grassroots activists to boost Biden and Democrats down ticket. Well, the truth is over. The failure of the party to operate an online strategy in a real way that exhibits competence, Ocasio-Cortez told the Times, made it hypocritical for the party in advance or to advance criticism of progressive messaging. So those are the big issues there. Now, let me quickly go over to some other things that you may find of interest. One second. Now let's talk about one of the biggest stories of the day. Pfizer has said that its COVID-19 vaccine is 90% effective. One of the teams racing to develop a coronavirus vaccine announced today its drug had shown 90% effectiveness against the illness, sending stock markets soaring and raising hopes of an end to draconian restrictions on movement. Well, U.S. pharmaceutical giant Pfizer and tests involving more than 40,000 people had provided results that were a, quote, critical milestone, end quote, in the search for a vaccine as global infections soared past 50 million, almost one-fifth of them in the United States. Stock markets had already jumped after Joe Biden was called as the winner of the U.S. presidential election at the weekend and accelerated rapidly on the vaccine news. An effective vaccine is seen as the best hope to break the cycle of virus surges followed by severe restrictions across much of the world since the COVID-19 first emerged in China late last year. Now, tens of thousands of people in Europe are currently living under restrictions, keeping them from leaving their homes, and millions of business owners are enduring forced shutdowns. Lockdowns and other restrictions have shredded the global economy, but with few other tools at their disposal to protect vulnerable populations, politicians have felt their hands forced. Well, we are a significant step closer to providing people around the world with a much-needed breakthrough to help bring an end to the global health crisis, Pfizer chairman and CEO Albert Bourla said in a statement. drug being developed jointly with German firm BioNTech is one of more than 40 candidate vaccines, but no other has yet made similar claims about its effectiveness. The company said they could pass the final hurdles for a U.S. rollout later this month and could supply up to 50 million doses globally this year and up to 1.3 billion next year. The scientific community reacted positively to the news, with top U.S. expert Anthony Fauci describing the results as extraordinary, quote unquote. But others pointed out that no information has yet been disclosed about the ages of the participants in the trial. If a vaccine is to reduce severe deaths and disease, and thus enable the population at large to return their normal day-to-day lives, it will need to be effective in older and elderly members of our society, said Eleanor Riley of the University of Edinburgh. Well, outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump was among the first to react, writing on Twitter, "Stock market up big, vaccine coming soon, report 90% effective, such great news." Well, Biden quickly followed, congratulating the brilliant women and men who helped produce this breakthrough. And American voters handed victory to Biden, at least partly because of Trump's failure to rein in the epidemic, often refusing to back restrictive measures or even masks, wearing in public, and repeatedly undermining his own experts. Well, Biden, who will not be sworn in until January, has already announced a task force charged with handling the virus, promising to be informed by science and experts. So that's going to be very interesting. The vaccine news will be a popular relief to people in Europe, the current local, or rather focal point of the pandemic, and the region is subject to the most widespread restrictions. So that's the story there. Let me just quickly look to see if there's anything else we could play for you. Bear with me a moment. All right, we'll see this in a second. All right, I think we're fine. Okay, what we're going to do, though, now is we're going to wish you a good day. It's about 11:15, and we'll speak to you tomorrow. There's so much to catch up with, and we need the time to get it done. So all the best. And thank you again for being with us. Most appreciated. Oh, just in case you haven't heard, tomorrow we're going to have another two-hour presentation of people who are part of the Coin Park Bernice Spreckman Senior Center. And they've complained that there's so many aspects of their facility, which is on Yonkers Avenue, that that it's not safe. It doesn't comply with American for Disability Act. The bathrooms are too small. Many seniors are walking around with a rollator and can't get in or move from the rollator onto the toilet. Just so many issues. And then on top of that, the administration wants to actually also include, of all things, a just a modality for getting things done. And it's become a problem because there's also a desire by some to get a dog park there, which would put a lot of the seniors at risk because they're vulnerable to all kinds of infections. And so we'll have to see where that goes. So there'll be easily 50 people on the show, and each one will have a position or a perspective to share with you. And so you, hopefully you'll tune in. We'll post the information about the show later on today, and you'll be able to find it on the YonkersTribune.com website, and we go from there. So again, thank you for your attendance today, and we hope you'll join us tomorrow. So let me just quickly look here. Yeah, here we are. So we'll be able to say goodbye. Okay. Here we go.